From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. How do you become the company your customer wants you to be? Think about that for a moment. I know it almost sounds like a trick question. A lot is happening in there, but think about it. How do you become the company that your customer wants you to be? It means that you already have a customer, first of all, but somehow that customer isn't, well, it isn't either the customer you originally tried to get, or the customer you didn't mean to get, or the customer you're just not serving as well as you should. But the customer likes you well enough to stick around. They just want more of you. And this creates a lot of hard choices for a company, because when you're a business, serving a new kind of customer can require big, radical changes. It's not a decision that's taken lightly. And okay, that's all pretty abstract, so let me put some bones on this thing. Let's say that you've launched a company that's consumer-facing. You make a product and you sell it to consumers. And it's working. Consumers love you, you've got real traction, you're growing, all that good stuff. But then a very different kind of customer shows up. Like this.
So my head of sales had come to me and he said, hey, we have this customer, and I don't remember the customer name off the top of my head, but they want to order 5,000 notebooks, but they want to put their logo on the front of our notebook.
This is Randy.
My name is Randy Nicolau, and I am the co-founder of Poppin.
At the time, Poppin was making brightly colored desk supplies and doing a great job connecting with young customers. That was always the plan. Poppin would be a consumer-facing company, and college kids loved their stuff, and they were buying, you know, one notebook at a time, because that's how it works in a consumer business. But now here's the head of sales coming with a request from a corporation that wants to buy 5,000 notebooks all at once, but with that company's logo printed on the front. And at first, Randy's like, nah.
I remember my first reaction was, hey, that's a crutch. We really are trying to become B2C.
B2C, business to consumer, a company that sells to consumers. That was the plan. But wait, Randy had been seeing some other data recently, which had led him to wonder if lots of companies were already buying Poppin's stuff. What if Poppin had accidentally become a B2B, a business selling to other businesses? And if that's the case, then here it is, the question. How do you become the company that your customer wants you to be? Because what if Randy's customer isn't just college kids? What if it's actually big companies that want to place big orders with him, big companies that can transform Poppin into a big company of its own? How do you become the company that your customer wants you to be?
With that moment, coupled with all the data we saw, said, you know what? We really should explore this and see if there's a there.
Today on our podcast, we're going to see how Poppin discovered the there. Because there were lots of theirs there. Today, only a few years after Poppin began pondering how to become a B2B company, 30% of Fortune 500 companies now buy from them, including what Randy likes to call all the cool kids, Facebook, Snapchat, Google, Warby Parker, you name it. Poppin's transformation was fast and successful, but critically, it was also done very carefully and methodically. And so we're going to go following the entire path, starting right after this break. Want to hear more great stories from entrepreneurs, founders, and creative thinkers? Check out the Proposify Biz Chat, a podcast hosted by Kyle Racky. He's the co-founder and CEO of Proposify, a really useful business proposal software platform that helps you close more deals faster. Each week on the Proposify Biz Chat, Kyle interviews other business adventurers about really practical things like how they handle sales, marketing, growth, operations, entrepreneurship, innovation, and technology. I just listened to an episode about product demos, and I loved the point that they make about how you can't just be an answer taker. You can't just wait for clients to ask you questions. You have to know their needs in advance and take control of that demo. It's great advice. For more like it, listen to Proposify Biz Chat now at proposify.com/podcast or subscribe on iTunes. All right, we're back. So in September of 2012, Randy's business partner, Chris Birch, has an epiphany. Chris comes from the fashion and design world and noticed that people spend tons of money on office furniture and office design, but then their desktops are covered in boring office products. You've got your Bic pens, your Mead notebooks, and so on. And even if you spend money to get nicer versions of all these things, they're coming from different companies, so they look totally discordant.
So when you display all of these products side by side, there's no consistency of design, of color, etc.
So Chris called up Randy, who at the time had just sold a software company to Adobe, and he had a non-compete that was keeping him out of the tech space. But Randy had started his career in consumer products anyway, and he wanted to get back there. So Chris told Randy the idea, and they dreamt up a solution.
We would apply a consistent design to create a family of products, whether it was a pen, a stapler, a notebook, or a desktop tray.
Which, when I hear this now, honestly, I'm thinking like, yo, Randy and Chris, this sounds like a B2B business to start. But at the time, they genuinely thought of it as a consumer product. Their designs were going to be fun and bright and poppy and youthful, and they'd appeal to a younger consumer who wanted to break away from boring old school and work supplies. So that was the idea, and it launched in September of 2012. For the next 2 years, growth was encouraging. In 2014, the company started making furniture that matched their supplies and marketing them to college students on Facebook. They started with a simple desk chair and filing cabinet, just to test the waters. And what they soon found was that they were getting $2,000, $3,000, even $4,000 orders with high repeat rates. And when Poppin looked into these orders, they found that they were coming from startup companies.
They're basically modernizing their office from these, you know, black and gray. You know, the old joke was you could have any color of office supply you wanted as long as it was black or gray before we came along.
So this is the data that Randy is thinking about when his sales guy comes over and says some company wants to buy 5,000 notebooks embossed with their logo. And Randy wants to start going after this business. It seems like a big opportunity. But he's also concerned because Poppin has thus far spent all of its time successfully courting consumers, and he didn't want to turn them off.
There was the potential for brand confusion if somebody were to have experienced us in their college bookstore or seen us in the Container Store, and all of a sudden sees us now coming out with benching systems and sit-stand desks and lounge furniture. And so we had to be very careful in terms of how we evolved that brand.
So to start, Poppin ran a test. It launched a tool that allows companies to order products with their logos on it. Just a little toe dipped in the B2B waters. And that was very quickly successful. So Randy thought, okay, time to really do this. And moving into B2B was going to create a lot of different challenges, and Randy and his team began plotting out how to navigate all of them. And we're going to look at three of the biggest ones here. They were, one, evolving how the company marketed itself. Two, evolving the products themselves, as well as how they were sold. And three, how to reallocate resources inside the company. Okay, so let's go through them all, and we're going to start with evolving the marketing.
So our current brand voice was very young and flirtatious and fun. And if we were asking people to spend $100,000 to outfit their office, we had to be a little bit more serious, convey quality, convey longevity, etc.
For example, they'd run a Facebook ad for one of their filing cabinets, and the copy would say, "Don't get caught with ugly drawers." Cute, right? But then it's not exactly what works for marketing to multi-million or billion-dollar companies. And yet, Poppin couldn't just pivot on a dime to totally reinvent their voice. That would have alienated and confused everyone. So instead, Poppin started thinking long-term and very strategically about how to evolve this voice. Not over a short time, but over years. A process that went from 2015 to 2017. And it began by looking at their upcoming product launches.
With each new product launch, it's kind of about where we would time the tweaking, if you will, of that voice. So it was product driven more so than just kind of arbitrarily calendar driven. There were these events that we used to say, okay, the voice that we will use to describe our new lounge furniture will be X. And then as we came out with sit stand, the voice that we will use to describe our sit stand will be Y. And that is how we folded in those incremental changes.
This way, Poppin didn't just wake up one morning and start describing its chairs differently. It debuted a new shift in voice with a new product and then would move the entire company's voice over slightly to match. And it became especially mindful of who would be seeing which advertisements, which isn't something it had to think about much before. So in places only read by interior designers, for example, Poppin started speaking the industry language. Fun fact, did you know that designers don't use the term file cabinet? They call it a pedestal. Huh. But on Facebook, where you could be read by consumers and professionals, Poppin goes with something that's still fun, but more sophisticated and in a consumer language. Remember that cabinet ad that said, don't get caught with ugly drawers? Now it would say, file in style. Okay, number two, evolving the products themselves. Remember that old joke Randy talked about a minute ago where you could have any color of office supply you wanted as long as it was black or gray? Poppin had built itself in severe opposition to that. Its products, including its furniture, were bright colors, bright orange, bright light blue.
But as we worked with, you know, Facebook and others that have a more dark or navy type of blue, we realized we had to enter that into the palette. We needed more neutral colors like a dark gray, where we've always avoided like black from our line. We've always, you know, thrived on, you know, the color.
Here you are playing into the joke.
Right. So to speak, but still with our not, I mean, playing into the joke would be coming out with black. But the joke
did include gray.
Well, it included a hospital or an institutional gray. I mean, we're missing words here, but to an interior designer, they would get the difference between the institutional gray you would buy at a Staples versus the on-trend slate gray that is all the rage right now across both businesses and homes.
The fact is, one bright orange desk might be awesome in a dorm room, but 400 of them are overwhelming in an office space. People want pops of color, not to go to work inside a paint can. So Poppin expanded its offerings, making a broader range of colors as well as designs, getting more into conference room tables and other larger items that offices need, and then an interesting thing started happening. Poppin is based in New York, and when they were dealing with potential customers who were also based in New York, the customers kept asking to come into Poppin's office to sit in the chairs and check out the desks because, you know, Poppin's employees are all working at these products. And this wasn't something that would ever happen with consumers, of course. A consumer is just like buying a bundle of pens. They're not going to come in and scribble first. But a company that's about to buy 500 desks really wants to make sure they see and like this desk. So as this started happening more, a space across the hall from Poppin's office opened up, and Poppin figured, hey, let's turn that into a showroom so there's a more official way for customers to come and look at the wares.
And so then we began tracking through our CRM system the number of showroom touches we would have, people whose first experience was through the showroom. And then we looked at the dollar volume, and it was like within a matter of months, we had sold millions of dollars out of this showroom. And we're like, huh, that showroom costs about $20,000 a month, and we're selling millions of dollars. We think there's a there, because unlike current retail, where you have to be on the corner of First and Main, and it's super duper expensive, we're on the third floor of a building. We could be, you know, we can be in an old converted warehouse. I mean, we can make any space look beautiful. That's our business.
That was in May of 2015. Poppin has since opened showrooms in San Francisco and LA, and now showrooms have become a big part of its strategy. In 2018, they plan to open 6 to 10 more of them across the country. So, okay, that's how they addressed problem two. Problem three is how to reallocate resources inside the company. Because moving from consumers to business customers meant rebuilding the entire back end of Poppin's business. Poppin was now getting into larger products, which meant that it needed entirely different manufacturing and fulfillment centers.
It requires a ton more storage space to store, you know, 3,000 file cabinets takes up a heck of a lot more space than 3,000 pens. And I know that sounds, you know, trite and obvious, but when you extrapolate that across $7 or $8 million of inventory, I mean, you're filling, you know, hundreds of thousands of square feet of warehouse space, and you have to find the partner that can hold that inventory, but then who can also move that inventory around and pack that inventory the way it needs to be packed.
And in fact, Poppin had to find multiple partners to handle multiple parts of the business, which is time consuming. And then, because those partners are all working off of different systems, Poppin had to do a technical integration with all of them, which means basically building this middle layer of technology that can translate all the different partners' systems into one common language that Poppin can talk. It's like building pieces of technology that work seamlessly with someone who only speaks Chinese and someone speaks Russian and someone who speaks German. And Poppin didn't want to hire an entirely new developer team to manage this, but its team is only 4 people large, so they couldn't exactly dump this whole thing on the team either. So this now forced Poppin to make some real decisions about its priorities.
We used to have a very cool feature on our website, which was called Design Your Desk. And you would literally go to this page and it would have all the outlines. You'd click on the file cabinet, you'd make it orange. You'd click on the chair, you'd make it blue. You'd click on the stapler, and you could literally design your entire desk. And then you click on a button, it would add all those products to your basket in one click. You could buy 10, 15 products and check out. And it was, I forget the exact statistics, but a very high percentage of our website visitors were using this design, the desk tool.
But you know what? That was a high percentage of consumer customers. And Poppin had determined that consumers were going to be a small part of its overall potential customers going forward. So this great tool, this tool that Poppin once was so pleased with, now it's part of history. Their tech team would no longer spend time innovating it or making tools like it. They had other things to do, like integrate giant warehouses so that their B2B business could take off. And when you make decisions like this, other decisions flow from it. If Poppin isn't spending the internal resources to continue focusing on consumers, it isn't going to spend ad dollars on them either.
If you took our ad budget, which for a startup is, you know, okay, but not, we're not spending the tens of millions of dollars that, you know, P&G spends in a day. So if we were to spread that across, sprinkle it a little bit across college marketing, a little bit across, you know, elementary schools, a little bit across moms, and then a little bit across B2B, we would never make an impact anyway. So what we do is we double down on the B2B. We use our retail partners to kind of help give us that B2C exposure.
And all of these decisions had an immediate payoff. From 2015, when Poppin first moved into B2B, to 2016, the company's revenues went from $23 million to $40 million. Randy and I spoke in the fall of 2017, and at that time they hadn't released their 2017 numbers yet, but he expected the company to grow north of 50% that year too. So remember that question I asked at the beginning of the show? How do you become the company that your customer wants you to be? Here's the answer. You commit. Just consider how straightforward and unemotional Poppin's story here is. There was no hemming and hawing. At the very, very beginning, Poppin wasn't sure if B2B was the right move, so it ran a test. And then it took the data from that test and everything else it was seeing, and it made its decision.
We all held hands around a table and said, okay, we're gonna become a B2B company.
And then there they were. Goodbye original vision for the products, goodbye cutesy marketing strategy, goodbye innovating new sales products for consumers. Poppin had made a decision and committed to it and had drafted up a multi-year plan to get there, and that meant everyone in the company knew the marching orders. Poppin became the company its customer wanted. And at the end of all this, Poppin is pretty happy being that company too. And that's our show. Problem Solvers comes out every week. So to make sure that you don't miss an episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you love what we're doing, please also leave us a review. It totally helps us reach more people. That's our problem solving right here. And of course, there are a lot more stories like this one, along with practical advice on how to start and grow a business in Entrepreneur Magazine and on our website, entrepreneur.com. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Again, my name is Jason Pfeiffer, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Let me know what you think about the show. You can find me on Twitter at heyfeiffer, H-E-Y-F-E-I-F-E-R. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.